Yes, I'll take my time. Oh, yeah. To reach there.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kelly Jones, and you're listening to Pioneer Radio.
Let's talk about radio, because radio is so good.
I'm going to tell you something, Flacca, and I want you to listen tight.
Telling stories to regular folks is not a trivial thing.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Even if it's hard to explain, even if you know they don't really want to hear it, not really, I urge you to give it a try.
You have my undivided attention.
Take a chance, find the words, find the metaphor, share the beauty, tell them a story.
Today on Pioneer Radio, we bring you three stories about three journeys, each one undergone by a person, a place, or a thing. We'll hear the story of a woman's journey to Guelph from her birthplace halfway around the world. We'll hear the story of the harrowing journey from Belgium to Guelph that kilos of tiny, delicate chocolates must make, by law. And we'll map the journeys that Al Capone may or may not have taken to the Albion Hotel during Prohibition. So stick with us on CFRU 93.3 as we ask, how did you get here? Our first story is from Sama.
Hi, I'm Sama.
Sama is an international student.
I'm from Iran.
Who came to Guelph to study at the university.
I'm doing Master of Computer Science here with a great supervisor and great environment. And my research is in the area of data mining. The general goal of my life, I think, is being helpful for other people. So I chose my research in the area that can be helpful for achieving some knowledge to predict some critical situation in future, which is in the field of data mining. And I hope to be able to progress even a little in this field and be one step for the others who want to pass this way.
So, Sama is from Iran, but she did not come to Canada for political reasons. She came here because she is, first and foremost, an academic, and she found, in Guelph, a place to realize her academic destiny.
I'm from my childhood, my life was in academia. I love to be in academia forever. And I know all my family and friends will tell me, until you die, you will go to school and you want to learn something. But yeah, it's the truth. I was thinking about, from many years ago, I was thinking about doing my master here, yes, in Canada. So as soon as we received that letter, I tried to apply for universities. I had a plan for that in advance. I have always wanted to do that, and now I feel really great that I achieved this goal.
Although Sama came to Guelph to study, she, of course, encountered a different political scene when she arrived.
In those times, I was not thinking about political situation, but many things, obviously, is different. So I was thinking of many things, thinking about having, being in top, top universities in the world, and having complete freedom, personal freedom. Honestly, there were some things that in some moments I felt really safe that I'm going out. I cannot deny that. But as it's my country, I really felt bad that in that political situation I'm living that. I'm leaving my friends there. I'm leaving my family there. I'm leaving everyone there. That they are trying to make it better, but I'm not. I'm going out. I didn't felt good. But it happened after 6 years. I couldn't do anything with that. I wish it happened later or before that critical political situations. But it happened for us in that time. And actually, no, I felt bad that I'm leaving. In one part of my heart and in another part of my heart, I felt good.
The part of Sama's heart that felt bad about leaving is the part that carries her family with her.
First, I was thinking about my family, my mother, my father, and my brother. The worst part was that in that time, I just, my niece was born, and I wanted to see her and be with her for a while, but I couldn't because we had to decided to come to Canada in, we had limited time to come, to land,
yes.
So we had to go, but I used my time to be with my niece, newborn niece, and I was with her for only 2 months. So in those, as soon as we received the letter, we decided to talk to our family seriously that we're not going to be apart for always. We will be together again, but we have to go to experience more, and we will try our best to gather all the family together again. I wish that we could be together for always. Unfortunately, life is not like that. But I try my best to bring them here to live together. We are in a, actually, they are in a very good situation there, especially my brother. And because of that, they themselves don't think that they want to leave Iran very soon, but they're thinking of joining me later in Canada somewhere. Yeah. I don't think I bring them in Guelph. Because just because it's a small city and they don't know anyone here, I'm coming to university and I have many people to meet, but it's hard for them to make their social life here.
Yeah.
But maybe in capital city or maybe in bigger cities, yes.
So what's the application process like? When I came to Canada from the U.S., I simply drove up to the border and showed them my acceptance letter from the university, and in about 10 minutes, I was tooling down the QEW with my fancy new student visa in hand. Needless to say, coming to Canada from Iran entails something else altogether. The whole process took Sama and her husband 6 years, although once they received their visas, they only had 3 months to pack up and get to Canada.
Actually, before us, lots of our friends were applying for immigration to Canada, and they received their letters that it's their turn after 1 year, after 2 years, but you know, I never understood it will take 6 years because in 6 years many things will change and many things will happen. And I was waiting for doing my master in Canada, so it took a long time. But I decided to prepare myself. My husband and I, both of us, decided to prepare ourselves for coming here. We learned English a little bit, and we tried to prepare ourselves for example, for applying to universities and these kind of things. But nothing changed in our profile in the website. Always that we checked that it was in process, nothing more. So really, I couldn't believe one day it will change. And actually, when we arrived here, it didn't change yet. I have to say that. And as soon as we received our visas, we tried to pack and we rent our home in Iran. And that was a hard part because we had to decide about what to bring, what to leave there, and so many things that we wanted to bring, but we had to leave there. So it took about 3 months for us to really immigrate.
Wow.
I suppose the next logical question is, why Canada? Why not Europe or the United States? Sama and her husband asked themselves the same questions, actually. They spent a lot of time trying to decide where they would go once they left Iran.
I like it very much in Europe, but Europe doesn't accept immigrants easily, yeah. As easy as Canada is for us, because our situation are more matched with Canadian immigration process than Europe. So, and another point is English language. My husband and I are not familiar with European language at all. So I know a little bit French. He knows a little bit German. But we cannot speak or go to universities or go to work easily there. It takes lots of time. So we decided to immigrate to an English language country. We found it easier to settle down and match ourselves to the society. 10 years ago that we were married, we decided to go to United States first because lots of our relatives are there, like my uncle, Hamid Reza's family, uncle, aunts, and yes. But after 11 September, it was really hard to get there. And after a while, I understood that life in America is very in higher speed that I want to live. Everybody is working, and in addition, I found it not as multicultural as Canada. So, yeah, I traveled to many countries to be able to decide better if I want to live forever in Canada or not. And still, I don't know if I want to live forever or not, but I'm happy here, and I like it very much. Yeah. The interesting part and surprising part for my husband and I, both of us, was that we didn't feel that much immigration that we expected. We felt like home again. I don't know why, maybe because we traveled a lot in, for example, in Australia, in Europe, but I expected to find myself in a really strange position, and I expected to feel, no, it's not home, but that was in reverse, actually. I felt, no, I feel comfortable. It's like home here. The actual reality is it's a really comfortable country. And by country, I mean the culture here makes you feel comfortable. I really appreciate that, and I'm happy to be in such country like that. I feel I've been here for more than 6 months. For example, for years here, maybe because as soon as I arrived here, I became involved in going to university, and I made my social life, I made my lots of friends, and I don't know, maybe because of that, but it's really, the reality is, if we put the time beside, the reality is I've been here for many years, not for 6 months.
If Canada is so accommodating, how different are Iran and Canada then?
I expected Canada to be much more colder. Obviously, it's about 6 months that we're here, and still the weather is really good and far from the thing that I thought. And I'm so happy of that. But everybody around me told me, wait, you will see the winter and it will be really cold as you expected, more than the thing you expected. Yeah, we have to become ready for that. Yes, I think it's really different, but if we can be more specific, it would be better. For example, this culture, I mean, I cannot group all Iranian people in one culture.
Yeah.
Because of internet, because of movies, everything really changed. And all over the world, they're going to have, I think they're going to one point, one culture at the end.
Yeah.
Because of globalization, because everyone can see everything everywhere, practically, and the reality is like that. But in TVs or in many public shows, they show that it's very restricted, very religious, not freedom. No, it's not like that. Actually, I know many people who came to Iran, many foreign people who came to Iran, and they really surprised by our parties because it's really big and very great there.
It took Sama 6 years to get to Guelph, and if you ask her, she made the right choice. For Sama, leaving her homeland wasn't really about politics. And it wasn't even really about getting a good education, although that's certainly part of why she chose Guelph in particular. Instead, the thing that really drew Sama out of her homeland in the first place and into a foreign country was an insatiable desire to see the world, and the idea that seeing the world is actually something that everyone should attempt to do.
Everybody loves their country very much. It's really obvious. But experiencing being in other places and exploring other people with different culture, it's a thing that it's a unique experience in life.
our next story is sort of a story about immigration. About 3 months ago, a new small business opened on Cardin Street across from City Hall. You might not have stopped in yet because of the massive construction taking place out front, but there's a new espresso bar and chocolate store called B Chocolate, and it provides a decadent haven from the machines and dirt and weather that are currently uprooting that part of downtown Guelph. B Chocolate is pristine. Its floors are white, its walls are white, its tables and chairs and ceiling, everything is a glossy white. A long counter lines the right side of the store, displaying an unbelievably large assortment of sweets that beckon you insofar as they're all also perfect. These chocolates are not Guelph chocolates, however, as much as this city prides itself on its local produce. These chocolates are immigrants themselves and have come 6,000 kilometers from Brussels, Belgium to be with us in Guelph. I asked the owner of B Chocolate to tell me the general history of his kind of chocolates and the personal history of the chocolates that sit in his store right now.
My name is Jean-Marie Nace, and I'm the owner of B Chocolate. The history of the chocolate is basically, it's a Belgian chocolate. It's a history that goes back over 100 years. It's a chocolate that is protected by law. Belgium is also the only country in the world with a chocolate law. And the history about this specific chocolate is that this was a U.S. Greek who visited Brussels to do a fair, a world fair. And there he was given 2 gold medals for his confectionery that he made. And he fell in love with a Belgian lady there. And you know how it goes. He stayed in Belgium for that. And he started bringing out little chocolates that were invented originally by John Neuhaus. He actually just copied the whole system of how to make those chocolate and everything, but brought those chocolates to the people in a very special way. And it was also a Belgian invention. And it's the windows that we today know as takeout windows. They're originally called the guillotine, like the guillotine in France. And that's how he brought his chocolates to the people, and that's how he was able to sell his chocolate cheaper than his competitors, and that made him one of the biggest chocolatiers in Belgium in 1935. So onwards, this chocolate just kept on growing. The Leonidas is a name that is famous all over the world. 1,400 stores in over 70 different countries, and it keeps on growing. The chocolate, bounded by law, no preservatives, no additives, 100% pure cacao butter. And to be real Belgian chocolate, they need to be made in Belgium by Belgian master chocolatiers and abide by the European Product Code, which states, again, that a product which is named after a country like or after a region like Champagne has to be made in that region. So again, that's why we import our chocolates fresh every week from Brussels, and that happens with a flight from Air Canada. So
every week. That's amazing.
What we try to do is we call head office every week with our order. They prepare it and they put it on a direct flight. It has to be a direct flight because this chocolate is very sensitive. It can melt within 20 minutes. And also the temperature fluctuations in the air are very dangerous for the fresh products, like the buttercream and the ganaches are all fresh products. These chocolates have a shelf life anywhere between 2 and 3 months. That's to show you how sensitive these chocolates are. So it's an 8-hour flight. They land in Toronto. We get a phone call, and day or night, we have to get up and we have to drive to Toronto, pick it up in a pre-cooled vehicle, bring them home to Guelph, and immediately put them in our window.
When he says day or night, he's right. Just 3 weeks after the store opened, Jean was called to Toronto to pick up his chocolates at 2:30 in the morning. But it's worth it. Business is good so far.
Yeah, we have been open 2 months now, and we have sold over 165 kilos in chocolates to the people from Guelph today and surrounding areas.
Yeah,
It's busy, and we're not really advertising at the moment. We're just going with the flow and in the old-fashioned way, like word of mouth, which is the best advertising you can get, and it keeps coming in steady streams.
So we know how the chocolates get here. But how does one get into the chocolate business? And how does one start a chocolate business in Guelph? Turns out, Jean got here in much the same way his chocolates got invented. Out of love.
I moved to Guelph to Canada for love. I fell in love. You know how it goes, and you follow the love of your life. So that's how I ended up in Canada. For the chocolate, how that came here is just, I'm Belgian by birth. I lived there most of my life, and I was always upset when I came back from the store, and I eat between 9 and 10 kilos of chocolate a year, so that means like 4 bars a week almost. So I am not really a chocoholic, because in Belgium it's the normal average 10 kilos of chocolate per person. So, and I was very upset with the chocolate that I tasted in businesses that I got around me that were actually saying or advertising that they were selling Belgian chocolate. And what I knew is that they basically are just importing a lesser quality of chocolate, which they mix with North American products. Mm. There it already stops basically being a Belgian chocolate, and that made me a little bit upset, and also was like, didn't really help me with my cravings. So one day I just said, you know what, let's do a mix of an Italian espresso bar with a Belgian chocolate store, and let's bring this to Guelph and bring a good quality of chocolate that people can taste the difference, and that a chocolate basically does the advertisement for you, and that's what brings us here today, and what was the whole inspiration for me behind the whole chocolate in Guelph thing. I come from a family of small business owners. My brother is a chef, and my uncle was a chef for the royals in Belgium. My grandmother had a cafe. On my mother's side, all my grandparents on that side had cafes. So restaurants and cafes has always been something that is in family. Mm-hmm. The taste for good things was always there. Mm-hmm. So this was my childhood dream. I always wanted to sell Belgian chocolate, inform people why it's so good, what is different with North American chocolate, for instance, which, again, you go with the preservatives, the additives, the palm oils, the vegetable oils, which these chocolates cannot contain, again, because otherwise they would not abide by the law. But that, for me, was this, what we have here, and all around it, the store, the chocolates, and is my idea, my concept. I designed everything, and it's a childhood dream come true, and I love it.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
The thing that Jean wants his customers to most understand about his product is that it's the real thing. And it's so delicious that you'll agree that long and carefully monitored journey from Belgium is entirely worth it.
The chocolate basically tells the story when you taste it.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination.
I've seen several customers that come back and that were convinced that they had Belgian chocolate. They just bought a two-piece box or just a one-piece of chocolate. And they went outside, they tasted it, and there was exactly 4 people I will never forget this in my life. And they were even arguing with me that another Belgian brand, which we know as baking chocolate from lesser quality, that was better than this chocolate. And I give them their boxes, the ladies walk out, and like 2 seconds later, like it was almost I couldn't turn around, they were back in the store for more. And I will never forget that.
Paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it.
Our next story is about the Albion Hotel on McDonnell Street in downtown Guelph. You might know the Albion for its booze and dancing and maybe its deep-fried pickles. So good. But did you know that it was a haven for mobsters during Prohibition and that Al Capone used to come up to Guelph from Chicago for getaways with his mistress at the Albion? Well, at least, that's the rumor. I sent Pioneer Radio correspondent Andrew Robinson to the Guelph Civic Museum to track down the facts behind this story. Andrew spoke with Kathleen.
So my name's Kathleen Wall. I am the assistant curator here at Guelph Museums.
To dig up some grain of truth behind this Capone rumor and to get some history of the Albion Hotel to go along with it.
It's a very old building, and it has the second oldest liquor license in the province, the oldest being in Toronto. We're second oldest here at the Albion. So it's been around, the building's been around since the 1840s, and it's been a hotel since its inception. There's been a lot of different things. It used to brew its own beer with an underground spring that used to flow from the Church of Our Lady underneath and into the hotel building.
Okay, but what about Capone? Where does he come in?
Yes, there's been a lot of rumors about the Albion and Al Capone. During Prohibition, Albion was still somewhere where you could get liquor, apparently. Now, the rumor is Al Capone would come up here to get his liquor, even from people like the Sleemans. But there are people who say that Al Capone's mistress lived at the Albion and that he would come and visit her there. You never know, and they do say that the Albion's haunted with a woman who walks the hallways looking for her lover. So who knows?
Kathleen is quick to mention that, although this rumor seems kind of far-fetched and out of context, it's important to remember that Guelph and Hamilton saw a lot of gangsters in those days. So many that there was a Hamilton mafioso who was a pretty convincing ringer for Capone, and probably got mistaken for him quite a bit.
There's also a Hamilton gangster by the name of Rocco Perry, who looks very similar to Al Capone, and it's rumored that probably that Rocco Perry was the person, not Al Capone, that people saw at the Albion.
Oh, and this is a picture of Rocco Perry here?
There's a picture of Rocco Perry and a picture of Al Capone, and Al Capone's a much beefier looking guy, but they do have very similar features. And Rocco Perry was a well-known Hamilton gangster who did have quite a few ties here in Guelph. And there is belief that he had ties to Al Capone, that he was kind of the Canadian connection to Al Capone. So they did deal with each other on a regular basis, and it wouldn't be at all surprising if they did meet. But whether they met at the Albion, who knows? But they did look similar, so it is possible that they got mixed up. But there are people still today who swear they saw Al Capone at the Albion.
Those are good photos. Like the hats.
Yes. They both look like you wouldn't mind to meet with either one of them, though, in a dark alley.
Yeah. No, they both look like mean characters, for
yes.
sure.
Yes, yeah.
Well, you might not meet a real gangster at the Albion these days. Or maybe if you did, you wouldn't know it. And you might never meet Al Capone's mistress on your way to the washroom late one night. But that's the great thing about a rumor. There's still a possibility, and the imagination doesn't need to rely so heavily on facts in order for that possibility to be meaningful.
So it keeps spreading, and people, and I mean, it's always fun to have a rumor like that. It's always exciting. It makes a building much more interesting. So these things will always kind of keep mushrooming, mm-hmm. and that's all part of the fun. As long as you don't base it as fact, you know, you can always have fun.
Yeah.
There's lots of fascinating stuff. Guelph has some great things. You know, we've invented the jockstrap, and we've invented the wire coat hanger and different things like that. We have some weird claims to fame here, but yeah.
You've been listening to Pioneer Radio on CFRU 93.3. That's our show. Join us next week when we bring you part one of a series on Guelph's most unlikely mayoral candidate, Ray Mitchell. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
The C.J. Mountfort Centre is a resource centre for people of colour and Aboriginal peoples at the University of Guelph. This is where we all unite. The Mountfort Centre, located in McKinnon Room 54 and 55, provides a microwave, two computers and a fridge among other resources. The centre is a place to study, sleep or relax.